Hi and welcome. I'm Steve Martorano, and this is the Behavioral Corner. You're invited to hang with us as we discuss the ways we live today, the choices we make, the things we do, and how they affect our health and well-being. So you're on the corner, the Behavioral Corner. Please hang around a while.
Hey, everybody. How you doing? Welcome to the Behavioral Corner. My name is Steve Martorano. This is the spot on Earth and in the Internet where we, we sit on the stoop here and hope we run into interesting people, and we hope they have interesting stuff to talk to us about, which, as the name implies, has everything to do with behavioral health, a very big topic, broad coverage. Basically, we take a look at decisions we make, choices we make, and how that affects our well-being emotionally, physically, psychologically. That's what the Behavioral Corner is all about, but it is underwritten by our good partners on this, Retreat Behavioral Health. There'll be more about them a little down the road. So we want to get right to it because we have a great topic, one that we sort of brushed upon for obvious reasons over the past year or so, but never more so than this past year. It's been an awful year. There's no other way to describe what the last 12 or 13 months has been like for everybody, everyone in the world. Bad across the board. On the other hand, it was good for stress. In fact, I know people have probably said this from the beginning of time, this seems to me to be the high watermark of stress. That's a human reaction. And so it's time to take a look at that, because stress is not something you can take a pill for. It's something that has to be managed. And that's why we're grateful to have our guest here on the corner this time, Dr. Michelle Finneran. Dr. Finneran is an author and a psychotherapist. She is in private practice in Southern Florida, and she provides her services to different organizations, individuals, adolescents, adults. She has this particular interest and has worked with a lot of first responders, which is going to become obviously important as we talk about stress management. Dr. Finneran.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
By the way, I failed to mention that she is, among all those other things, a very strong advocate for mental health. So I don't want to warn anybody to hear a howling in the background. It's very windy on the corner here. extraordinarily so. And I hope I don't fall down in here. So, Dr. Finneran, did I get that right? Stress is not something you can really, although it's probably prescribed often, it's not really something you can cure with a pill.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely not something that you can cure with a pill. It's definitely a feeling that takes over. And my definition of stress, like you said, it needs to be managed. Stress management is oftentimes learned from our family of origin. There's also a genetic component to it as well, your tolerance level of stress and how you manage it. My definition of stress and overview is a kind of a condition or a feeling experience when a person perceives that demands exceed their personal and social resources that the individual is able to mobilize. So basically, it's a maximization of a feeling that's overwhelming. A lot of people feel that their feelings of being overwhelmed or tapped out or recognize themselves as being stressed. And the first thing is recognizing when the stress is becoming unmanageable.
Let's talk about some of the physical things that occur when someone is under stress. What goes on with their body?
There could be a variety of symptoms that happen physically, from migraines to headaches to absolutely 100% complete fatigue, like so much fatigue that they can't seem to get out of bed. There's a lot of relation to gastro problems, irritable bowel syndrome, definitely syndromes and conditions physically that manifest, particularly if you're the type of person that internalizes a lot of stress, it seems to manifest physically within the body.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You mentioned that among the many things that it can physically do to you is exhaust you.
Yes.
Put you in bed, which interestingly enough would probably most often be associated with, I don't want to say mere depression, but specifically depression. Is stress often overlooked as a cause for some of these other things people are suffering from?
Yes, yes. You know, the two main things that really stems is anxiety or depression. And they kind of, you know, at times kind of go hand in hand. You know, when a person is overly stressed, that overstress becomes overlooked as something diagnosable as a depression or anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that is the pre-something of that.
Yeah, it's a shame because you're leaping right over perhaps what's causing the depression. So it's interesting, now that I think about the way stress works, it certainly works in my life and everyone else's life. It is interesting in the following sense. I can manufacture my own stress. It doesn't have to be a case of, boy, I'm going to work today. I know the boss is really going to be on me, or I have to drive on a treacherous road. You can make stress up out of thin air, can't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, I believe that's called internal stress. It's stress that something that you happens within your body, within yourself, that you develop cognitively, behaviorally, physically, is something that happens within you. There's external stresses, boss yelling at you, road rage, whatever the case may be, outside the scope of yourself that may cause stress. And some of those external stresses are out of our control. The internal stress that we develop within ourselves is definitely one that can be managed and in our control. Mm. So there is a distinction between internal stress and external stressors.
Yeah, some of that external stress is in fact valuable. We'll get into this a little later, that there's bad stress. And yeah, surprisingly enough, there's stress that's appropriate. This internal stress, though, can be real debilitating. It can stop you from doing things, right?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that you mentioned previously in terms of the physical manifestation. It actually becomes, the stress becomes so internalized and so within you, it becomes absolutely 100% paralyzing. And that word is something that I want to definitely emphasize because it prevents you from doing. It interferes in your level of functioning on a day-to-day.
Yeah, I think an example I can think of is and I'm sure you have, run into more people who have said, oh my goodness, the idea of public speaking so terrifies me that I can't imagine doing it. That's kind of an internal process. You're getting stressed over something that's not happening so that you don't have to do it.
Absolutely. When people get ready, they pre-op themselves for a stressful situation. There's something called anticipatory anxiety. When you're thinking of something that you have to do, like public speaking, you anticipate stress to come your way. And so that also, that anticipation interferes and prevents you from actually doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, you know, we also didn't mention blood pressure, I'm sure, and heart disease.
Oh, yes.
All absolutely affected by stress and management. Well, as I said, it's an incredibly stressful time that we're living in. So we're grateful for your expertise here. I know a little bit, we're going to talk about your work with first responders who know a little bit more than a little bit about managing stress. One of the things that you hear a lot in behavioral therapy anyway, is that if things are not right in the situation you find yourself in, well, then change the situation and see if the problem goes away. You can do that with stress on the one hand, correct?
Externally, yes. You can try. You can try.
But there are situations that are stressful that you cannot change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These are stress situations that are out of your control.
Yeah. And as a therapist, when you're confronted with that, where do you begin trying to break that down for somebody?
So we talk about, you know, understanding that this is something that's not in your control and letting go of a lot of people that try to control stress that is out of their control makes matters so much worse for themselves.
Yeah, because that's a stressful thought.
Absolutely.
I can't control this, right? Mm-hmm.
So many people, they tried, you know, to try to live in that bubble, you know, they try to control everything. And when things get outside the scope of that, it becomes externally stressful. So I try to like let go of some of the things that you can't control and maybe, you know, let the universe, let your higher power, let other entities kind of take over because you're not supposed to control everything. That's not the way it works. You can control some things and that are in your scope, but there are certain things that you're not able to control. So let's stop trying to make things that we can't control controllable and let them just naturally and organically happen. Sometimes those situations turn out to be the best outcomes.
Most of the cliches that we know about everything turn out to be true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be cliches. Mm-hmm. One of the cliches that we all grow up with is keep a pleasant thought techniques like that really can work. I mean, someone who always goes to the dark side, their immediate default position when confronted with some news or some situation is they go to worst case scenario. That's a bad idea, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I believe that people do that because it's serving some sort of purpose for them. It's serving some sort of maladaptive purpose for them, and that's why they go there. If it's serving some type of maladaptive purpose for them to go there, then they continue to do it.
If I go to the worst place first, when that doesn't happen, my anxiety level will go down, my stress will diminish. Is that what they're doing? Are they doing something like that?
I think when people go to the worst case scenarios, and I've seen a lot of people do this in my practice, and even in my family and my support systems, they go to the worst case scenario in order to, it's like a defense mechanism. They prepare themselves. It hasn't happened yet, but they prepare themselves for the worst case, just in case it happens.
Yes.
The problem with that, though, Steve, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like you manifest it into the worst case scenario because you are now there trying to prepare for something that hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it probably works in a deeply unconscious way. The other thing that's always occurred to me about folks like that is that no matter what the ultimate truth of the situation winds up being, when you begin at the worst spot, you have a longer period of time before you realize that it's not as scary as you thought it was. I guess my go-to response is, hey, you can always freak out.
Yeah.
You know, don't make that the first thing to do. Make it the last thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Make it the last thing to do. And then there's the other side of that where you see people who are sort of like oblivious to it all. And we often think that personality type's a little weird too. What do you mean you're not freaked out? There's a pandemic going on.
Right. There are certain levels that people, how it manifests within them and what they do with it. It varies on so many different ways and levels, depending on the person.
Speaking of pandemics, what have you seen in your practice with regards to stress and how severe it is during these times?
In my practice this past year, there are three levels of areas that are really, really has heightened and continue to stay heightened throughout this pandemic. One is the rates of suicide have gone up tremendously. The rate of domestic violence has gone up significantly. And the abuse and dependency of substance abuse has risen to an ultimate high. Mm. So those three areas behaviorally since this pandemic started has taken form. Also, people have lost the sense of having routines and functioning on no structure at all. And that is something that therapeutically, I have to reteach people how to live on a day-to-day basis without the structure of going to school, of going to work, of working remotely. You know, it's a different life that we're living right now. And so I have to reteach people and I have to try to get them to adapt and adjust to having somewhat of a structure in their lives so they're functioning.
There's nothing more upsetting on a day-to-day basis for almost anyone than that their well-established routine gets disrupted.
Absolutely.
I mean, it can cause stress when that's just a minor disruption.
It throws people off completely. Yeah. I feel like the person that can be a little bit flexible in their routine and adapt and adjust, they're going to have the better outcomes.
Yeah. Our guest is Dr. Michelle Finner, and she's a psychotherapist in the South Florida area. She is talking to us specifically about stress management. There's a month for everything, as you know. April is in addition to whatever else it is. Stress Awareness Month. So we're talking to folks like Dr. Finner about this. Talk to me about some of the techniques that you would tell somebody can help them lower their stress levels, you know, sort of get on a more even keel.
Yes. There are several things that strategies that we have to identify. Number one, we have to recognize when there's stress and when there are symptoms of stress. We have to recognize that. And when it becomes unbearable and unmanageable, we have to allow ourselves to ask permission for help, seek out help when we are unable to manage it ourselves. We have to also be aware of our limitations, what our family can do, of our job and of ourselves. We have to maintain responsibility in our daily responsibilities and duties. And sometimes there are times where there is a lot going on and we have to take an adult time out. You know, when you tell your child you're becoming too emotional, you're crying too much, maybe you're having a tantrum, maybe you need to take a time out. Well, adults also need to take a time out to just kind of regroup and compose themselves a little bit when things become all encompassing. You know, put more variety in your job, in your life, so you don't get mundane and you get bored with your type of lifestyle that you're living. I would say if you can safely get out of your area, try to take a little vacation, a little getaway if you can, to change up the scenery, change up your environment safely, if you can, if that can happen. Try to change the little things that kind of gnaw at you, what you can, and accommodate and adapt to adjust things that you cannot change. I think organizing your time to concentrate on vital tasks and amid stress is a real problem. It's a big interference in people's lives. And let's not try to cover it up. Let's try to work with it. Let's try to work so that the outcomes are not like paralyzing to you. I think it's important to distinguish what is going on that's stressful in terms of your job, your home life, you know, things that you can change, things you can't change, and then set some boundaries and some priorities for yourself with people that are around you, with your partner, with your family members, with your boss. What's manageable, what things that you can do, what things that are out of your scope of what you can't do, and communicate that.
You know, because this thing is set against the backdrop of the pandemic, it's easy to make a list of the things that would cause stress and how to manage some of that. Have you in your practice or in the field in general, do you ever come up against a patient who has a sort of, I don't know, undifferentiated stress? They can't put their finger on what's making them, what's stressing them out. Does that happen?
Absolutely. They know something is wrong. They know something doesn't feel right. They know something's happening to them. They can't really place their finger primarily on what it may be. And with that being said, it's not like a huge, you know, outlined kind of thing that's in their face. You know, stress can happen in so many different ways. It could be very secretly. It could be very discreet. It could be secondary. It could be multiple secondary stressors, you know, that accumulate, you know, and collaborate together that promote some anxiety, some feelings of being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So there are ways it manifests. Yes.
Yeah. And you're an expert, so you would naturally go in those specific areas. What if the extreme case of someone for whom those triggers or potentialities don't exist, and they still feel that there's something wrong and I'm stressed about it? Do you first have to get to the place where they got to acknowledge that that's an irrational attitude?
Well, it might be very rational. It might not be conscious. So the first thing I do is I assess kind of like, when did this start happening? Mm-hmm. How long has this been going on? When it started feeling off or not settled or not right? What was happening in your life at that time? What was going on in your life circumstances or within yourself at that time? And build from that, you know, bring it to a more conscious level.
Mm-hmm. I guess at the end of the day, you can't tell anybody who's in pain that it's not nothing.
Right.
We have more on stress management with our guest, Dr. Michelle Finneran, here on the Behavioral Corner. But pause, if I may, for a little housekeeping. We have to remind folks, it's very important that you find us. If you like us, please follow us, Facebook, Instagram, in your car. If you're in the neighborhood, you can follow me in that as well. We're particularly interested on the Behavioral Corner in hearing back from you. While it's true, no one likes critics. I certainly don't. We're open to any suggestions you may have about things you want to hear us talk about on the corner, things we're getting right, things we're not getting right. Those reviews are, you know, you can do those, I guess, Apple's iTunes, the best place to do that. So I'm just rising to that point, hoping you'll help us get the word out about the Behavioral Corner.
Studies show that 2020 has negatively affected the mental health of millions of Americans. That is why at Retreat, we work to provide comprehensive mental health programming through our Synergy Health programs. To learn more about Synergy and the comprehensive mental and behavioral health services we offer, call us today at 855-802-6600.
Dr. Michelle Finneran, she's a PhD, psychotherapist, author, and a strong healthcare advocate. She does a lot of that as well. She's here to talk to us about stress and stress management. There are a group of people, they're easily identified, who seem impervious to stress insofar as it doesn't interfere with what they have to do. The ordinary examples are, for me, are those extreme sports guys, big wave surfers. I mean, not that I've been to many bullfights or any. I mean, I think of a matador and I think, how in the world do you wind up getting into that business and not go completely crazy? And among that group of people, and we see them all the time, are first responders. These are people who are expert in A, responding, but doing so under stressful circumstances. These people that I'm talking about who seem immune to that human expression or fear or stress, are they different than other people in some way, or are they just better at handling this?
For first responders, they are trained to see things that normal civilian people don't see, that is very traumatizing to the normal person. So they have training in which to handle what they're witnessing. And hopefully there's training for these first responders. And that's what I try to help them uncover, is some of the trauma that they're exposed to. A lot of first responders see so much of it that they become immune to it. So they know automatically how to go about responding because they see it often in their professional lives.
They are desensitized in a sense to the horrors that they have to run into.
I do think that they are, because I think for them, if they're not, and you know, there, of course, there are certain things that catch people off guard that are first responders that are disturbing to them as well. But you know, because they have seen so much of it, they often do have to decompartmentalize, and they often have to desensitize to protect their own mental health.
Problems, though, can occur later.
Absolutely. If these things are not talked about or addressed and processed with a professional, particularly if you're first responders, there's a high rate of divorce. There's a high rate of substance abuse. There's a high rate of suicidality.
Yeah.
There's a high rate of all those numbing things.
So these people that we talk about, whether they're, you know, mundane adrenaline freaks who jump out of airplanes and ski down mountains, and people who are doing life-saving work like first responders, you seem to be saying that one can be trained for this kind of work so that it's not completely crushing and you can do it, right? Is that the same process a physician goes under who has to open someone's chest and operate on them? That would strike me as stressful for the person performing the operation. And yet doctors, are through their training, can shut that down, that stress?
Well, it's part of their job. It's what they've always wanted to do. It's something that they have a passion for in terms of saving lives. So to them, it's not as stressful as for, there's certain personalities and certain people that cannot do this.
I guess that's what I'm getting at, because we almost began at this point. You mentioned that there are a number of ways one can become stressful. Your environment can cause your stress, the way you grew up, the people you were around. You also mentioned that there might be a hereditary component here. So you believe and have seen, I guess, people who are just born better at handling stress.
I don't know about that. I definitely think that there are different temperaments. People are born with different temperaments and different tolerances. Yeah, I do feel that people are born differently. For example, in my family of origin, my oldest brother has a very calm demeanor. Okay, he's calm, he's collected. He doesn't really get too much to rattle his cage. My middle brother is a little bit more of an intense. He's a competitor. He was in sports, so he has a more of an intense approach. And I'm somewhere kind of in between. If I allow myself to get rattled, I can get rattled and heightened. And there are other times where I feel like I am able to reel it in and control myself. So we're from the same family, but because, you know, our temperaments and our tolerances are so different. We're definitely different individuals.
This final point about treating and managing stress, are drugs used at all ever when dealing with stress or no?
Not illicit drug. You're not talking about illicit
therapeutic
medications.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, there's no DSM-5 diagnosis for stress. It's usually ramifications are anxiety or depression. So that has to be uncovered, the anxiety and depression that may be causing some stress or reverse. And then you get prescribed based on those disorders or those conditions.
Yeah. So stress is treated as a symptom of something else.
Yes. Yeah.
But you mentioned just briefly there in passing, there is, of course, unfortunately, a whole range of self-medication that goes on. And it's always the wrong stuff. A drink is not going to make you less stressful, much less more than one drink. But, you know, marijuana in my lifetime, and you've seen it as well, has gone from a drug that causes everything, every evil imaginable, to today, where it now cures everything. Which is just a remarkable 50-year history of the drug in this country. And in both cases, I think the claims were exaggerated. You know, you can go into these, you know, these medical marijuana dispensaries and get prescription that's specifically for something like insomnia or anxiety. Would you recommend anything like that or have you?
No, I don't recommend marijuana as a way to relieve stress. I think it's a drug, you know, it's an illicit drug. I believe that's a form like drinking too much alcohol or drinking alcohol to relieve an intense feeling. I think these are all numbing agents. And now you have a secondary problem. You have not only are you stuck with a primary stressor that you're numbing, but you also have a dependency on a substance use.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Now you have two problems.
I'm sure many of your colleagues believe that marijuana is not a stress reducer. It's going to come as a shock to tens of thousands, millions of Grateful Dead fans all over the world who seem the least stressful people I've ever seen in my life. Dr. Finneran, I know you have a new book out. Is that right?
I do. It was published by Routledge, Taylor & Francis called Surviving Domestic Abuse, Formal and Informal Supports and Services. It's on Amazon.
And you've got a website and people want more information from you or if they're in your area. We'll put that up on the Behavioral Corner site. And they'll be able to contact you. And we hope we can get you back here under less stressful circumstances in the future.
Absolutely. I would appreciate it. Thank you for having me, Steve.
That's it for now. And make us a habit, hanging out at the Behavioral Corner. And when we're not hanging, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter on the Behavioral Corner.